Welcome back to another Religica podcast. In this interview, Dr. Michael Reed Trice speaks with Reverend Paul Hoffman, who reflects on ritual and the nature of mystery. Hoffman's professional life has spanned over 30 years of tumultuous changes in the American religious context. He is a seasoned practical guide to how and why contemporary communities are formed today. He is a passionate and persuasive voice on ritual as the bus that gets us to the thin places in our lives. Take a listen.
This is a Religica production. R-E-L-I-G-I-C-A.
You've been a parish pastor for nearly four decades, is that right?
That's right.
And where was most of this ministry taking place? In the United States, primarily?
Totally, in North America, yes. Two different calls in Nebraska, one a bit north of Dallas, Texas. And then the bulk of my ministry, my longest call, was spent right here in Seattle at Finney Ridge Lutheran Church from 1996 to 2015, 18 years. I would split my ministry into two very distinct parts. A ministry lived in what I would call a very Christian context in those first three calls that were basically in the Midwest.
Okay.
Two in Nebraska, one in North Dallas. But actually, most of the people in that congregation were people who had just slid down from the upper Midwest. Mm-hmm. But then in 96, when I came to Seattle, things shifted so dramatically because I found myself smack dab in the middle of a post-Christian culture.
What does it mean to be post-Christian?
Well, for me and for the work of ministry, what it meant was the usual assumptions that I was raised in and trained in as a seminarian about what the larger culture understands about Christianity and what they're willing to accept about Christianity and how much they are willing to order or pattern their lives along the traditions and beliefs of Christianity are completely different in a post-Christian society, where in a city like Seattle, such a minority of people actually believe and practice the Christian faith. And the rest of the world around it goes on in a completely different set of patterns and assumptions. But what I've really come to appreciate that the Christian tradition has given me eyes to see is that there's a little bit of death for us every day.
Yeah.
And whether those deaths are the failure of a marriage, the loss of a job, the diagnosis of an illness that we would rather not face, the loss of our former toned body as a youth that we now find is failing us in our 60s and 70s, all of those are little deaths connected to the ultimate death that we'll find. In his brilliant musical, A Little Night Music, Stephen Sondheim has a song called Every Day a Little Death. Mm. And it's the best theological piece I know of to describe that.
There's something also in what you're saying as humanizing. There's a modesty in our lives that I recognize that my hold on control is much different than I ever imagined as I get older. Death isn't a wholly negative thing. It actually opens new ways of appreciating the full life that I do have, and I am engaging in a daily way.
Yeah, that's a pretty deeply evolved theological thought, Dr. Trice. Yeah. And it's one that I think people try to avoid until they absolutely have to be confronted by
it. Okay.
And perhaps, I'm just thinking about this for the first time,
actually.
But perhaps that's a great descriptor, too, about what it means to be post-Christian.
Okay.
It occurs to me that one of the best ways to describe a post-Christian culture is a culture in which people have really bought into the notion that we are, in fact, self-sufficient.
Huh.
Everything about the Christian tradition flies smack in the face of that. That I can do this by myself. There are enough resources available to me that I can overcome this illness. I can power through this divorce. Mm-hmm. I can find resources like money and glamour that will help me buy my way to a better way of feeling.
You and I have known each other a number of years, and in the last 2 years have been in a hospital room together with a man who was, I think, within 24 hours of his own death. present with him and also present were members of his immediate family who felt a natural
aversion
God. Yes, they felt that aversion to it. And yet we were all in the room, we were together, and there was something happening there around the nature of ritual that enabled them to participate in that very painful experience of watching their father die.
Yeah, they were willing to hear the Christian scriptures read. I think a large part of that they did out of respect for their dying father because they knew that would be so important to him. But they also entered very deeply into the rituals on their own. Like, not only what does this mean for the dying, but what does this mean for the living? How will we go on from this loss?
Having said that, mystery is somehow experienced in the ritual. What is ritual? We refer to this word as though it has a great agency in our lives, in hospital rooms, over the dying. What is ritual and what is it supposed to be doing for us in community?
There's a very distinct ritual at a Washington Huskies game or a Seattle Seahawks game. And everybody knows the ritual. People know when to stand up and sit down. They know what to do when a touchdown is scored. They know what to do when the opponent is on the 1 yard line. So that is ritual in a sense.
And they may know nothing else about each other, about their lives, but they are participating in something that somehow
and unites them as a community, single-minded of purpose.
Yeah.
There's this amazing thing about ritual.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't just belong to the people that are inside the stadium, so to speak. It's not just for those who are gathered in any given congregational assembly on any given religious occasion, Sunday morning or otherwise. Christian ritual is infused with not only endless examples of words from our sacred writings, but holy habits, holy actions that honestly go back as far as the creation story itself, and certainly go back as far as, for example, the Exodus.
An astrophysicist friend of mine, who is a person of faith, says to me the other day that when he was walking with his son, he looked at the top of a conifer, and between the top of that conifer tree and the limitless, seemingly limitless expanse of space is the mystery of all of it. And most of our lives are spent paying attention to the top of the conifer and down.
Right.
He said, it's everything else that is the great expanse of mystery that ritual is somehow responding to. I mean, that is quite a responsibility. What does ritual want to say about the nature of mystery?
Well, first of all, I would say ritual is sturdy enough to carry that mystery.
Like a well-built house.
It's done it for 2,000 years of Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. It's done it for 4,000 years of Abrahamic traditions. Mm-hmm. And I think the beauty and the power of ritual is that it takes us above the conifer tree.
Okay.
The recently deceased theologian just to our south, Marcus Borg from Oregon, described those as thin places.
Thin places.
Thin places. Places where the atmosphere between us and God or us and mystery or us and deeper meaning becomes so thin that we can almost touch it. Never quite touch it, but almost touch it. And ritual is the bus that we ride in to the thin place.
To get there.
At least that's how I
understand. Can I do it alone?
I do think that people have deep, meaningful, personal, even religious rituals, like their own morning prayer, for example, or their own devotional time. We're so narrow as North American postmoderns to think that when we're doing that, we're doing it alone.
Postmodern, when you say that.
I think my greatest descriptor of the postmodern is a person like me who's constantly saying to themselves, I've got this.
I see.
The most important pronouns are I, me, mine. I can do this. And of course, I mean, my goodness, I was raised by Depression era parents who raised themselves up by their bootstraps and taught me that there is nothing more glorious than making your own way.
Yeah.
You can do this. But I want to get back to that lone person in their prayer corner and the assumption that that is either private or personal. I don't agree with that, okay. That it can be either of those things. Because the scriptures that they hold in their hands have come from what the book of Hebrews calls a great cloud of witnesses. They are holding in their hands a storied book that goes so far beyond their own Tuesday morning devotional moment. I do daily devotional time and reading every single day of my life. I find it to be important and highly influential in the way I lead the rest of my day. Mm. But I don't think of it as me time. Mm. I am setting that time aside to come into communion with at least four other writers in the particular devotional resource that I use every day.
If the storied book is really nothing more than the arc of real people's lives, their stories and their narratives that shaped their values and their beliefs, and now that book is in front of you.
Absolutely. I believe that with all my heart. Maybe 15 years ago, we had the privilege at the congregation I was serving to take a group of adults on a choir tour of Italy. And we sang in various, very old worship spaces and cathedrals. Country churches that, you know, were Romanesque. I mean, they had been there since the 400s or 600s, mm-hmm. perhaps. You know, these were old buildings. Mm-hmm. And lovely people, all of us, but citizens of North America and people who often don't think beyond dinner that night to just speak with these folks, these singers, and say, I want you to think about the context in which we sang earlier this evening. Mm-hmm.
When you're in that small country parish on the hill that's been there 1,000 years or more, and you think of all of the ritual, the worship, the prayer, meditation, the lamentation, the joy that's taken place, the grief that's taken place there, in some way it decenters the me paradox.
Yeah.
Because suddenly I can't help but see myself in the lineage of people's lives. Yeah. So do you think that ritual resides within us?
That's a very tricky question that needs to be carefully considered.
Why is that?
Any biologist will tell you that our bodies are nothing if not series of patterns. Mm-hmm. Breathing, our hearts beating, synapses firing in our brain, blood circulating throughout our body, nerves communicating with one another for movement and thought. Those, I believe, could be mistaken for rituals, but I believe instead that those are really patterns. They are life patterns, to be sure, but I don't understand them to be internal rituals any more than I understand our own thoughts to be internal rituals, because I think a ritual needs to be connected to something outside of itself, to a tradition, to a community, to a sacred text. I believe that to be true. Absolutely.
When my daughter was 5 years old, just before she was about to go to sleep, violet sky starts to take the horizon to itself, and there were stars that were poking through the canopy. And my daughter, without missing a beat, says, "Oh, I meant to ask you about this. What are the stars for?" Whatever my response would be to her, that's a question we have to answer every day. Ritual has a way, if it's the bus that gets us to the thin places, it has a way of getting us to the thin place and back intact. Is that possible?
Different people from different religious traditions or from no religious tradition at all would bring different answers to that question, and how each of them would in some way be wanting to get on the bus that takes them to the thin place.
Yeah.
they want to know, what are the stars for? An atheist who's a scientist, an astronomer, the child who somehow knows that there's a mystery bigger than she is because she's seen the star in the skies. They're all on a quest for a deeper meaning, and they're probably going to each come to a different level of me. And I don't think that Christians or any other religious tradition needs to be threatened by that. You don't have to believe what I believe about what the stars are for in order for us to live peaceably and work for the justice and mercy of all people.
And yet, there are the kinds of rituals that negatively enforce ideas in the world.
Of course.
I'm thinking of white supremacist groups, they have a way of responding to what the stars are for, and they have an encoded ritual or language system that enables them to remember and recruit. And that's also a form of ritual. Do you see a difference between negatively enforcing ritual and those kinds of rituals that are doing what you mentioned a moment ago, helping us to live in peace?
Well, the easiest answer I can give is that rituals, like everything else,
yeah,
it can be used for good or for evil.
Mm-hmm.
A computer can open our eyes to wonderful horizons of insight, but it can also be the vehicle by which pornography is marketed. Ritual is no different.
Mm.
If our rituals are only somehow being used to reinforce our own goodness before a gracious God, then we've sold ritual far short of what it can accomplish.
What would ritual admonish in those kinds of quests for the stars, for instance, that are contrary to our shared humanity?
Yeah. I got really nervous when you started to ask that question because I was thinking, how would I ever answer that? And then ritual came to my mind and saved the day.
Great.
And immediately took me to Ash Wednesday.
Okay.
And that annual liturgy of having crosses of dust placed on our foreheads with the words, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return." That's nothing if not an admonishing ritual. Does ritual bring life to me? Or does ritual bring life for all?
Ritual is the bus that gets us to the thin places, but those places are actually much more robust than we imagined.
Yes. Christianity is a religion of paradoxes.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't imagine that we will find the thickest at the thin place. Mm. We can't imagine that we will find life in death. We cannot imagine that newness of our own lives can come out of something that is ancient and meaningful. Ritual helps us to maybe not comprehend that in our brains, but to take it into our bones.
You have been listening to Religica. Visit us at www.religica.org.